So what we said on Sunday morning was that there was a prediction by this guy, Dirac. And this prediction was that there are not only electrons, but there are also anti-electrons. And an anti-electron is just a particle with the same mass of the electron, but with opposite charge. So, for example, in this case, because of, you know, general relativity, okay, you know that you need to conserve the energy when you have a process, but from Einstein, we know that the mass of a particle is also energy. So what can happen, for example, is that you have an electron, the electron is meeting an anti-electron, which is its anti-particle, and they collide, and because of conservation of energy and conservation of charge, electric charge, you have that the global charge can go to zero, because it was zero at the beginning, also at the end, and by conservation of energy, the mass of the two particles can go into energy of a photon. So this process is called annihilation. So we know, that for the electron, there is its antiparticle, the anti-electron, or positron, and they can annihilate, and for a world, a universe where you have the same number of electrons and the same number of anti-electrons, you can arrive to a universe, for example, where, again, there is the same number of electrons and anti-electrons, but this number is zero. Okay? So, for example, in this case, we are starting from a universe with one electron and one anti-electron, and going to a universe without electrons and anti-electrons. So, the fact that the electron has its antiparticle, the positron, is a common feature of all particles. Indeed, let's say that we have, this was the Mendeleev table of elementary particles that was presented on Sunday, and for each of these particles, there is an antiparticle. This antiparticle, sometimes, is the same particle. For example, we have the quark, which is, maybe you remember, they are the bricks of the protons and the neutrons. Okay? For example, we have the up quark, which has charge 2/3. And for this quark, we have the anti-quark, which is this one, whose charge is minus 2/3. So the opposite charge, but it's impossible to read, but the same mass. And the same for all these particles, the quarks and the leptons. The situation is different for the Gauge bosons, because, for example, the antiphoton is the photon itself. But this feature is not so important for what we are going to say. What matters is, in particular, the fact that there are quarks and antiquarks. So, let's say that the relation between these, the operator, the way to move from this table to this one, is called the charge operation. Just to make it in very simple words, you have that a universe is symmetric under this charge operator. Okay? If whatever it happens to a particle X, occurs also to its antiparticle, that we call X bar. Okay? So, for example, if you measure a property of the electron and you measure the property of the antielectron, if the universe is symmetric under this symmetry, see, you discover that the result is the same. So, the same observables that you can regard X gives have the same numbers of the operators involving the antiparticle. We also saw that for many reasons the universe at present is dominated by matter. Okay, first mistake, right? So sorry if there is somebody here. Only a primordial matter has survived. And indeed, if we see the galaxy, here the Earth, what happens here, and the outer universe, we understand that at present the universe is basically contains only matter. But as we said last time, it's very hard to believe that the universe started in a preference situation where you have more matter than antimatter. In particular, when you're speaking about the hot universe, you're not speaking about matter antimatter, but you're speaking about baryons antibaryons. So what we understand is that at the beginning there was the same number of baryons and antibaryons, and at the end, today, we have only baryons. So how's it possible? The last time, I'm summarizing but also adding some concepts. The last time we saw that this clever guy, Nobel Prize for Peace, gave us a recipe. This recipe is the recipe to start from a universe with the same number of baryons and antibaryons and to end up with a universe where we have more baryons than antibaryons. This property, these ingredients are that you need that the baryon number is violated. You need that particles and antiparticles don't behave exactly in the same way. And moreover, the universe must be out of equilibrium. Okay? So, who knows the meaning of these ingredients? In other words, is it the first time you heard about the saccharide ingredients? Silence is not a yes or not. No, good, we have one. Okay. So, luckily, I can oversimplify our life, okay? And I give a stupid example to try to explain. So, let's see how I can waste time and to. But my aim today, okay, is not to give you many concepts, but to clarify some of the concepts of Sunday. And I really would like that, okay, it's very easy in this way, I guess. So, I really would like that you understand the point. Okay? So, I repeat again with this stupid example. See? How to avoid to make slides. And, okay, imagine here, okay, you have these glasses, good. These ones are these ones. Now I explain better, huh? And, okay, at the beginning, the same height, okay? Okay, so here I have these ones, okay? The glasses with the red liquid, good. With the red liquid, and this red liquid, okay, is called the X, will represent the X particle. Then we have a pipe, an invisible pipe here, connecting, good. And the pipe is transforming the red liquid inside here into a purple liquid here, okay? So, interrupt me because maybe I'm not clear. I'm not clear. So you need a bit of fantasy to follow me. So the point is that what I was saying in this slide is basically, okay, the three ingredients are these ones, baryon number violation, CNCP violation, and the universe must be out of equilibrium. And for simplicity here, I'm not introducing CP, I'm avoiding, but the one of you giving me an example of this kind, where you introduce a CP asymmetry, the CP, wins a bottle of cheap wine tonight to share with me. Okay? So you have all the, I'm leaving tomorrow morning, so you have less than 24 hours to win a bottle of wine. cheap for my staff, for our staff. So the point is that we want to start from a universe where there is no particular asymmetry, which means that we start with a universe with we have the same number of particles corresponding to the red liquid, so the same volume of red liquid. Okay, we have also at the beginning the same number of the liquid, the purple liquid, where you have half of it is made of this Y particle, and half of it is made of B. And since we want to start from a symmetric universe, we want that the amount of purple liquid here, made of particles, we will clarify better, this amount of liquid is exactly the same of the amount of liquid of this side. Okay, so again, I repeat the notation, moreover, X means particle, X bar antiparticle. So the aim is to start from this condition, where, okay, it's wrong here, but the height of the liquid here is equivalent to the height of the liquid here, okay? This means that it is in equilibrium, okay? Imagine the stupid example, eh? Okay? What I'm saying, okay, just to be clear, whenever red liquid goes through this pipe, becomes purple. Okay? But also the purple liquid can go into this glass, okay? So whenever the purple liquid goes through this pipe, it becomes red. So this means that if you leave this glass and this glass there is a flow of liquid equilibrium. So at the end, even if you start with that, you're at the same amount. So the fact that this pipe can convert, for example, X into Y and B is what is called a rate. In particle physics, here, okay, if a particle physicist would be here, he would say that here, he's saying that I'm claiming that the X particle can decay, can be transformed into a Y and B particle. Okay? So this kind of process is X going producing the particle Y and the particle B. So at some point in the universe, I can have such event, okay? Temporal. So whenever you have this situation, you have a flow of the liquid, the red liquid is going here. But again, if you leave it there for a long time, the amount of liquid here, in the end, will be the same amount of, the altitude, the height of the liquid here will be equivalent of the height of the liquid here, okay? And since these two glasses, this with X and anti-X, has the same altitude here, and you have that the flow will end up in filling in this glass and this glass. So the point here, okay, I want to emphasize the following. Imagine that the section of this pipe, the diameter of this pipe is different. Okay, for example, this one is larger. When you do that, what happens is that you have, at the beginning, you have this glass is filled first before this glass, right? Because the pipe here is a large size. So you increase the flow. Imagine that you have something like that connecting here to here, right? It goes instantaneously. Why? If it is very, very thin, okay, the flow will be not fast, okay, will be slow, but at the end, if you wait enough time, again, you have that the liquid in the glass goes into the liquid. So, by this picture, in principle, it's possible to understand the Sakharov conditions. So, the Sakharov condition is saying that first, in order to the aim, I repeat, okay, is to finish, to end up with more baryons, more particle B than antiparticle B, which means that to close the final pizza after a long while of this event, okay, must be one where you have more liquid here than here. So, okay, first, baryon number violation. Clearly, okay, if you start in this condition where you have the same number of baryons, the same number of baryons, where you have the same amount of liquid here than here, if you have these conditions and you want to end up with in a condition where you have more baryons than antibaryons, are different, okay, it's clear that you need a baryon number violation, right? So, yes, no? Okay, thanks. Then we need a C violation. Okay? This quantity here is represented by the size of the pipe. Okay? So, for example,
saying that you have CP violation, CACP violation, it means that the processes occurring to X are different, are quantified, the result of the measurement on this particle X is different than the result you obtain from the X bar, the antiparticle. So here, this condition is equivalent to say that the pipes have different diameter. So finally, the auto-equilibrium. The auto-equilibrium here corresponds to say, okay, I have these processes, okay? But at some point in time, I can press the pipe and nothing goes wrong, okay? So I have a kind of during the flow of the liquid, I can interrupt it, and the universe doesn't move away from that condition, okay? So at some point, I take a picture of the situation where the liquid is flowing, and the universe, and that picture doesn't change in time after that. So, and now, in principle, okay, all the ingredients should be clear, right? Because what happens, okay, is that you have this, for example, imagine that you can have this process, okay? You have the liquid going, but, for example, if the section of this pipe is the same, okay, it doesn't matter. At any time I can take a picture of what is going on, the situation, and I have the same. I have this, always the same amount of liquid here than here. Maybe it's increasing at the time, but the altitude here is the same amount here. Okay. So you understand that the section of the pipe has to be different. Okay, because otherwise, at any time, I have that the amount of B particle in the universe, the amount of purple liquid here, is the same amount of purple liquid here with antibodies. Then, okay, it's clear that even in the case that the section of the pipes is completely different, okay, if I wait infinite time, I always end up with a situation where the amount of purple liquid, all the red stuff, okay, the red liquid goes here, all the red liquid with the antiparticle goes here. So in the end, okay, maybe in a spot of the time of the flow of the liquid, you have that, it's true, at some point you have more, the pipe with larger section will produce at a certain moment more baryons than antibaryons. But if you do interrupt the flow, at some point you wait, and okay, maybe you fill first this glass and this glass, but in the end you have that you are filling all both glasses. Okay, so in principle, this picture that is should give you the idea why we need the Sakharov conditions to produce an asymmetry. Okay, I don't know, is it clear? Not clear? Yes.
It's quite clear, but still, so the number of X plus Y plus B stays the same.
Yes.
So where are the antibodies coming from?
Yes, yeah. No, so where is the antibodies coming
from? Where they are coming from, if you increase, you're going to decrease the number of antibodies, but X, Y is going to be...
Ah, okay, sorry, because baryons, in this example, are just B. So what saying baryon asymmetry means that at the end you have more baryons than antibaryons after you have closed also the pipe.
Yes. But so if you've got more B, but less X than
No, but X is not a baryon, so you don't have to consider it. Okay? Just baryons, just B. You want to this one, okay? Here X plus Y plus B is a constant. X, yes.
So what will be X?
X in the real world.
Yes.
Some particle produced at the beginning of inflation that decays into other particles. But the X is not a bar, it's not a quark.
Yes, so what is it exactly?
Ah, it depends on the model. You have many models where at the inflation you are producing, at the beginning of the universe, you are producing particles. But since you don't want to have an ad hoc assumption,
you must assume that this process has the same number of x and anti x.
Okay. So we find a solution for B, but we still have many questions about x.
Yes, sure. But you have this, but you have many assumptions.
Good.
But this assumption doesn't require an asymmetry between x and anti x. This is.
What is the origin of the classes? What prevents
x and
x in
particular
to be
regulated? Okay, very good. In principle, here what I'm showing is just the pipe with the largest section. In principle, you can have also small sections, small other pipes where x and anti x are going into one. So this is one, for example. Moreover, just to give you a sloppy idea, you can have a universe almost empty, okay, where you have x and the x here, and then decay, because this one doesn't require that to have x and the x very close. Okay? So that's the reason, because these pipes are the dominant one.
Okay, can I go on? Yes, no, yes. Yeah.
I don't understand why the two pipes have a different section. Sure.
Yes, exactly. The pipe, the section of the pipe is represented by this rate. This rate means that the process transforming x into y and b is faster. If this gamma is larger than this gamma, okay? If the process involving x, the decay of x, is larger than the decay of anti-x, okay, the flow will be faster.
Yeah, okay, I mean,
yeah.
Why is it faster for the antibiotic side? I don't understand why it is faster.
Ah, yeah, I'm not explaining the origin of the section of the pipe. Okay, the point is that here, the section of the pipe means C and CP violation. Because, we said here, we have here. If C is conserved, it means that all processes involving X and anti-X are the same. So, if you want to modify, if you have saying that, claiming that C is violating is equivalent to saying that this rate is different from this rate, because if you have, if you apply the C operator that I was mentioning before, X is going to anti-X, and Y is going to anti-Y, this transformation, and B in anti-B. So, saying that the universe, if this symmetry is a good symmetry of the universe, means that you can differentiate the observables involving the process X are not different from processes involving anti-X. Quantity, the observables. Yes, no?
It's the same processes, but not the same rate.
The observables involving x and anti-x are the same number. Okay? So, any measurement regarding x gives the same result than any measurement of a process involving x gives the same result of a measurement of a process involving anti-X. So, right? In this case, if you measure the decay of X and anti-X, and if the result must be the same, because if you assume that the result is the same because we have this C asymmetry, because you are in a universe where you don't differentiate what happens to C to X and anti-X, in this case, this rate must have the same number, the same. When you measure, the result is the same here than here. Yeah. Well, no. Okay.
We are. This is something we observe: the CP variation, the fact that the pipes are of different size. Is there a more fundamental explanation for a theory, like, I don't
to explain this asymmetry, this CP variation?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A real understanding of why it is like that?
Okay. Anytime you ask me why, there are different levels of because. No? The first one is that nature now, at the moment, you already see observables where you have this violation.
Because we are in a world where there are more matter and antimatter at the end, more or less. But that was, I thought, a consequence of CP.
C and CP, both yes. You need. Okay. But here in this example, I'm not mentioning CP because P is an operator that, in order to speak about CP, you need to introduce the chirality of the particles. Okay, so at this level, I didn't want to introduce that.
No, but for instance, there is only, I think, left neutrinos and right anti-neutrinos or something like that. There is, you have a kind of specific chirality of the neutrino, and this is linked somewhat to the CP by...
Yeah.
But we don't have a general theory like... quantum gravity or a very high level general theory that will explain where this break of symmetry comes from, or do we have it?
No, we don't have. It's okay. CP violation, when you're, do you remember the last time I was speaking about the Lagrangians? When claiming that you have CP, in order to have a CP violation, you need that there are some couplings that are complex numbers. Okay? But this, in principle, you can put without any problem, complex. Right? So that's the reason, because in principle, there is no, it's very easy to have a model where you produce, you have a CP violation.
So as the universe expands from the Big Bang, at which time does the CP break of symmetry arrive?
This one?
Yes. Which time?
No, it's always there. Because it's an interaction that is always, can be more or less strong than during the evolution of the universe, depending on the mass of the particles, but it's always there. Like it's the equivalent to say that that the coupling, a complex number, is changing in time. In principle, if the coupling is a fundamental number of the nature, this number is not, okay? So, okay, I didn't want to... Okay, maybe I will discuss it later, if you want, okay, with the coffee. But, because I wanted also to say something else. And, okay, so, last time we also saw that, okay, you have quarks, we have this table, and in particular we have the necessity of the Higgs boson. Okay, because the mass of these particles is zero if you are not assuming a Higgs boson. It was related to the fact that I was discussing about the gauge theories. Okay, so these particles have a mass due to the interaction with the Higgs. And the larger the interaction, the larger the mass. It was the case of the harmonic oscillators. Moreover, the Higgs, at present, what you said, is a particle with such potential. Right? It was where it's oscillating, not close to the origin, like the usual particle, but here. It was, when I was speaking about the harmonic oscillators, it was equivalent to say that the oscillators Y had a constant value. Okay? This constant value was not zero. Okay, it was a conclusion of the last time. So we know the potential of the Higgs today. But what we don't know, it's clear, is that what happens to this potential, for example, when you are in the early universe. In the early universe, you have a situation where the universe is dense and hot. So this effect, as we see, makes a difference. Moreover, there is also the issue that this potential is known only when, let's say, the ball stays here. But if you're in studying processes where the energy, the movement of the ball is larger. For example, if the ball can go here. And here, for example, you don't know how the potential is. Okay? So there are two problems here. First, if we wanted to understand the behavior of the Higgs potential in the universe. First, we have the problem that we know only this potential at zero temperature, at low temperature. And second, we know the structure of this potential only here, around this minimum. This is an issue because, as I said, LHC is a machine that is able to probe energy up to 1,000 times the mass of the energy corresponding to the energy stored in a proton. But as I said, all results from LHC are results that are in conditions where there is no temperature, not a dense situation. So, in order to explore really the universe, what we have to do is to produce energy, like high energy, but also to produce a condition where you have a temperature, which means a lot of particles there are interacting in thermal bubble. So, when you're measuring the mass, it's a feature. Okay. What happens is that, for example, all processes in ATLAS and CMS, LHC experiments, in this process, what you have is that there is the beam of protons colliding, so the first collision. And after that, the particles that are produced from this collision can go away without colliding a second time. Okay? So this is a feature of why I'm saying that the LHC is not an environment where you have a thermal bath. Because in a thermal bath, you have a lot of particles at the same time. And the particle moving, make one step, collides with the second particle, bounce, collides with the second particle, and so on. So what you have, for example, what I'm saying is you have a lot of particles. Good. And if you want to cross this room, and people are speaking with you, okay, the time that you need to go from A to B is different. Because, okay, clearly, if everybody wants to speak with you, you are here, you have to speak. You are here, you have to speak. Okay? And a second stupid example. Okay? I was coming here Saturday night by taxi. I was left in some place. Okay? And, okay, imagine me from the satellite, good, with a very small suitcase. So I can walk very fast. And if I walk very from the satellite, if you see something moving very fast, it means that its mass is not very large. This, but imagine that if I have a suitcase, okay, I have to move very slowly. Good. So from the satellite, you don't weigh me. You just infer from the velocity of the object that is moving if its mass is large or not. Okay? So if I have a large suitcase, I move slowly. So now imagine that I have no suitcase. But what happens here is I was stupid. I didn't print a map. So I didn't know where I had to go. I had to ask people, okay? And they was asking, and clearly, okay, I was asking for Hoya sunset. And clearly everybody was saying, there are billions of Hoya sunset, no? But I'm sure, I don't know how, you have to go in that direction. I was following, really, okay, thanks. At some point, no Hoya sunset hotel. And they was asking again, and again, and again. So, okay, the fact that I was asking, and means that my path was not a straight line, but it's like to have an effective mass, right? There was from the satellite where you're taking picture every 10 minutes, there was no difference between a guy having a very heavy suitcase and moving slowly, and then me that I was doing tan 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 tan. So this kind of scenario where there is a particle interacting with, where there are many particles in the thermal bath, and there is a particle moving in this thermal bath, is a very known process. And maybe you studied mechanical statistics, okay? And in this case, it's a bit a second step, because you need to know mechanical statistics in a relativistic environment, because particles are very fast. Okay, this kind of, if you want to study whatever you want, but this stuff is called thermal quantum theory. So, but it's a very known. So, my sloppy example of the guy with the suitcase is known. Okay, in the case of the particle in the thermal bath. So, what happens? Is that due to the thermal bath, a particle with mass m has actually a larger mass. Okay, this one is because it receives a contribution from the interaction with the thermal bath. Okay? This one is called thermal mass. So in the end, you have that a particle, the thermal bath, has its mass plus an extra contribution due to the thermal bath. So this quantity goes like the coupling of this particle with the thermal bath times the temperature. You understand that has to go proportional to the coupling, because if the particle, this particle I'm considering here, doesn't speak with the people, okay, you can have a lot of people, but if you don't speak, you go straight, okay, you don't look like a guy with a heavy suitcase. This effect is important, okay, because, for example, it can change the dynamics. Something that is forbidden at zero temperature can be allowed at a finite temperature. And because, why? And the reason is, okay, in this simple example, we can see the following. At zero temperature, imagine that you have a particle, for example, a particle, decaying into two particles. This decay is forbidden if the mass of this particle is smaller than two times the mass of this particle. Because in order, otherwise you are violating energy. You are starting from an energy, and for example, imagine that you have this particle that is 1 GeV, okay? And this particle that are 2 GeV. You go to the reference frame of the particle here, okay? So what you see in your reference frame where the particle is at rest, you have that here, you have just 1 GeV process, a process of 1 GeV. And the end, in the same frame, if these two particles have 2 GeV, 2 GeV, 2 GeV, and the end you have a process that has an energy larger than 4 GeV. So this process is forbidden because it violates the energy. The energy at the beginning, okay, if the mass of the particle is smaller than 2 times the mass of Y, the energy to go from here to here is larger, okay? So it's not possible at zero temperature. But at final temperature, you have that, for example, this decay now is allowed. And the reason is that you have this extra contribution, the mass of the particle here, what I was saying, the energy of the system in the reference frame of the particle here, is not just 1 GeV, the mass of the particle, but there is something else. And if this the sum of the mass plus this something else is larger than the masses, the energy involved here, taking into account the thermal effect, this process becomes allowed. So, for example, what happens is that, just to give you a very simple example, you can have a very heavy particle a light particle at zero temperature. A light particle cannot decay into particles that are heavy. Okay? But in the case of finite temperature, if the temperature is larger, maybe the initial particle that is lighter, okay, that's mass light, receives energy from the thermal bath, so it's like, I'm a lot of energy, and so I can produce something that was forbidden before. Okay? So this is an effect that is physical, it's not. You have to finish 11, right? Okay. Good?
Yeah.
So now I use the analogy that of the harmonic oscillator. Do you remember? I was claiming that the Higgs mechanism is a mechanism that is giving an extra mass to the particles. And there was an analogy between particles and harmonic oscillators. So, for example, okay, saying that the mass increases was equivalent to say that the string constant the string constant of the harmonic oscillator was increased as well. So also okay. Whenever I say that the mass increases, means that the harmonic oscillator increases. This string constant of the harmonic oscillator increases. Which means, okay, that in this case, okay, I have that additional contribution that I'm considering is not that contribution that comes from the Higgs mechanism, but it's the contribution coming from the thermal bath. What I'm saying that the mass was the previous one plus a second piece. So, I remind you that in this case, for example, you had in the case of the harmonic oscillator, the fact that you could have you had an extra contribution to the string constant was corresponding to consider an effective string constant that was larger than the real string constant of the harmonic oscillator, because in this case it was the string constant of the harmonic of the string field string, the string ones, yes. Okay, sorry. I was saying string, but I was meant clearly planning string. Okay, plus this contribution. So what happens here when you have an extra contribution in the harmonic oscillator is that the potential is modified this way, right? Okay, for example, in the case of a small string constant, we have this case, but the potential becomes like this size, this kind of potential, when you're increasing the string constant. Okay? So what you have basically, what they say, okay, you take the potential, this one, and the effect of increasing the analogy. The effect of increasing the mass is equivalent to you take this. Here, okay? You go up. Okay? And you obtain this effect. But in the case that the potential has this behavior, the parabola, the effect is clear. But in the case of the Higgs potential, that was this one, it's not clear what happens when you take this one, right, and you spread up. Because in principle what you can have is that you increase, okay? You rise. And maybe what you have is that you do by deforming the potential due to the temperature, okay? Maybe you are producing these kind of potentials where there is no barrier between the minimum. There is all the time just one minimum. But for example, you can also have this case, right? Where for example you have a situation where there are two minima, right? So the fact that the potential at the given temperature can have only one minimum or two minima is a key feature. And the point, okay, now a question for you. Do you remember what an order of a phase transition is? This is thermodynamics. Eh? Okay, let's do stupid questions. Okay, an example of a first order phase transition. Come on, guys. Okay, boiling water. Okay. Okay, an example. This is a bit more subtle. An example of second order phase transition. Ferromagnetism. Okay. Because all the dipoles in the magnet move. Okay. The difference between a first order and second order phase transition is that you have a sudden process that suddenly modifies everything. Okay, this is a first order phase transition. A second order phase transition is something where the modification is low. There is no abrupt modification of the phase. So,
excuse me.
Yes, sure.
Slow with respect to what?
Sorry. Okay. The point is that the exact definition. Okay, you have to study how the free energy of the system modifies at the moment of the phase transition. If the free energy is a continuous function, this case you have a second order function. In the case that the free there is a discontinuity, it's a first order. So we can do this. Try to understand the phase transition of the Higgs. In the case of the Higgs, you discover something completely different. Okay? And the reason is that what I was saying here, okay, it's true that there are first order, second order phase transitions, but there are also third order phase transitions, fourth order phase transitions, fifth order phase transitions. And if you go on, the infinite order phase transition is called crossover. So if you study the Higgs phase transition, what happens is that here, for the Higgs mass corresponding to the observed one, 125 GeV, you can move, you can increase the temperature, and there is no different phase. There are no phases. Okay? So, in the case of the standard model, which is the model that contains just the particle that we have observed till today, the Higgs phase transition is not first order, is not second order, but it's a crossover. In particular, keep in mind, it's not a first order. But in principle, okay, this is how the what I was saying here, how the potential evolves by increasing the temperature depends on the matter content that is coupled to the Higgs. So this is model dependent in the sense that, for example, okay, there are theories claiming that there are more particles than what we have observed till today. For example, supersymmetry, extra dimensions, or even cases where, for example, you want to add the dark matter to the standard model, and so you have to add new particles. So it's true, with the particles that we have discovered till now, the Higgs phase transition is a crossover, it's not first order, but we don't, in principle, new particles that are still hidden can modify this feature. So clearly, okay, we have two ways to understand how the situation is in reality. Either LHC, to try to understand if there are new particles, or, okay, try to see what are the predictions of, for example, a first order phase transition. Okay? Because if you have clear prediction of what a first order phase transition generates, you make an experiment and you can understand how the phase transition was. Okay? So the key feature is that in the case of the first order phase transition, you have the case of boiling water. Okay? You have bubbles expanding, and as you can imagine, okay, this process involves fast changes, which should remind you out of equilibrium. And moreover, you have a faster modification of the mass distribution, which, if I don't have time, means gravitational waves. So let's focus on baryogenesis. And what we see here is that in the case, let's assume that the Higgs phase transition is of first order, which means that you start at very high temperature, okay, and the potential of the Higgs is just one minimum here at the orbit. But when you decrease the temperature, a second minimum appears. You see, second minimum. And there is a temperature called the critical temperature, okay, at which the potential of the Higgs here has exactly the same free energy, okay, that's the figure of it. Okay, the altitude of the two minima is the same, okay? Then you decrease more the temperature, and what you have a second minimum. But this second minimum is all the time separated by a barrier. And whenever you have a barrier, you can understand that a transition from this phase where the Higgs has no, where the Higgs is here, to the phase where the Higgs is here, is not a smooth process. What are the ways to go from here to here when the barrier is small? Two ways. One is quantum effects. You know, maybe by reading books, you know that at quantum level, in principle, a particle can cross this wall and goes to the other side. Right? Or thermal fluctuations, because we say that we are in the thermal bath. So in average, you know the average energy of a particle, but actually there is a distribution. So some of these particles can have enough energy, kinetic energy in this analogy, to cross the barrier, you go, and to go down. In the place, this process is said, going from this place with this minimum to this minimum is said tunneling. So, in principle, in the place of the universe where this fluctuation occurs, you have a bubble formation, a bubble nucleus. And, okay, for example, here you have a bubble. And here, at some point, for example, you have other fluctuations. At some point, you can have a second bubble, and so on. So the phase transition happens in this way. You have many bubbles that expand, and in the end they percolate, which means they cover all the universe. So, what is nice is that do you remember the Sakharov condition, right? You have out of equilibrium, barium violation, and a CACP violation. Okay? In the case of the particle content we know, plus other particles that modify the shape of the potential, you have all the Sakharov ingredients. Therefore, if you consider what we know today, and we add just some particles that we have not discovered, in principle we can have all the features that are required to produce the baryon asymmetry of the universe. The point is that the bubble formation corresponds to the auto-equilibrium. Then the CP violation is something that is in the CKM, in the process involving quarks and gauge bosons. And moreover, in the standard model, at the moment we don't see it, but there are processes that are very, very rare, and these processes can violate the baryon number. So all that to tell you that by a quite complex feature, okay, you can have that the bubble expands. This is the wall of the bubble, okay? Expands, and due to the fact that there is CP violation, the process that violates the baryon number, which is called spiral. And the fact that the Higgs has a different behavior here than here, because you are in two different phases. Here, you are in the phase where the potential is like that. So the Higgs stays here. And here, okay, inside the bubble, you are here. Okay? So I guess it's not fully clear. But the message is quite clear, I guess. The message is the following. So, we know that the particle content of the universe at the moment is what we have already discovered at LHC. I'm finishing, so it's not a problem. Okay? So, but in principle, LHC, in the next years, can discover new particles. And in principle, these new particles can modify completely the potential of the Higgs, how the potential of the Higgs evolves in temperature. So in this case, the Higgs phase transition is not a crossover, because I was showing, but it's a first order phase transition. And whenever you have a first order phase transition, in principle, you can have also baryogenesis, which means that you produce the baryon asymmetry of the universe. Okay? So that's the end of the story. So, this one for later, if you want. Remember, I'm not kidding. Okay, I understood something, no? First, you have to understand what I said, which is not a trivial task. Second, CP violation, a bottle of wine. But tonight, because... Or even today, now. Good, coffee, no question. No question.
Okay.
She's asking me about dark matter. Dark is the color of the coffee, right? So that's the reason because we're confused. So the point is, now I'm answering you, but I want to know who knows what dark matter is. Oh, somebody, very good. Oh. Maybe you have a wonderful friend because it, okay. First, you can. I know the point is that dark matter. Okay, it's there. If you, for example, you know that the galaxies, the movement of the orbital stuff, okay, depends on the matter content inside between this stuff and the center of the galaxy. Okay? And if you study it, you understand that the Newton force attacking this object is larger than the force that can be described by the visible object. Which means that, okay, actually, since you see that this object has is attracted with the force larger than what you see. But, this means that there should be matter producing gravitational attraction.
that we produce for, so you can see. So this is the what dark matter is not like. Did you want to know anything here?
Do you have candidates for the
Okay.
Neutralino.
Okay. Okay, the point is that, do you remember, on Sunday I was saying what we know and what we don't know, but we can speculate. So, since about dark matter, we just know the fact that it should be there because you are measuring the gravitational force. But you don't know anything else about it. Yeah? Maybe it's distribution, but you don't know. So, in principle, you can have many new particles that can produce this effect. So, now the point is that, okay, there are two requirements. First, that this particle exists. But second, you are also measuring the abundance of these particles in the universe. Because the global expansion of the universe. The expansion of the universe is related to the energy content of the universe. So, if you consider the energy content of the universe that you see, the matter, you don't understand what is going on. So, it is clear that the energy of the universe is the energy corresponding to the visible matter plus the energy of what we don't know yet. Okay? This particle, a contribution, for example, comes from dark matter. So, the second term is okay. We have the galaxy, that there is something dark producing the gravitational force. Moreover, you know that in the universe there are more particles that produce the global level from the universe. So, concerning candidates, there are many theories beyond the standard model, which means beyond the particle content I was presenting. And depending on how you embed the standard model in the fundamental theory, you can have different dark matter candidates. But, maybe
it's
you
have... It's out of the standard
model. Yeah. Indeed, the problem I was... Here I was focusing, I was just mentioning that Bartesianus, no? The problem of Bartesianus. But the standard model, the particle content we know today, has different, several problems. The first is, for example, we don't understand dark matter. Second, for example, we have the problem that the universe, I was mentioning it on Sunday, had a phase at the beginning where when it was expanding very, very fast. This phase is called inflation. And in order to have inflation, you need a particle that is playing the role of what is called inflaton. Okay? It's producing this one. So the standard model for it is the problem that doesn't play dark matter. Moreover, as I said, doesn't explain the baryon asymmetry, because in order to explain the baryogenic, I had to assume that the transition was of first order. And with the particle content we know today, the phase transition is not of first order. Okay? So problems are dark matter, baryogenic, and inflation. This might not be